Hello, this is Professor Liu. We're going to talk today about tips for working in the studio and being productive, because as much as we would all like to be productive, sometimes it's more challenging than we would like it to be. Before we start, though, I want to remind everybody that you can purchase a portfolio critique or a Skype session if you would like some guidance in terms of your studio practice. If you are applying to art school this year, this is a really great way for you guys to have support from a professional artist, from myself, from one of the teaching artists. Everybody on Art Prof has a totally different set of expertise. So you can just go to artprof.org, purchase a critique, and get the information there. Let's talk about studio tips, because I think what's very tricky about having a studio practice, no matter what age you are, whether you're in high school, college student, you're working professionally, I think most people have so many things that they're trying to juggle. I mean, my students in art school, they've got crazy busy schedules. They're usually taking three studio classes, some liberal arts courses. High school students have the same thing. And sorry to tell you students this, but it only gets more complicated when you get out of school. And so carving out that time to really be focused and productive in the studio, I think is an ongoing challenge for everybody. I don't think anybody has it figured out, but I do want to share with all of you some basic strategies that I know I have come to rely on when I am struggling to really buckle down and get some work done. I think there was this quote that Chuck Close said. He's a contemporary artist. He said that inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work. And that's a very common concern for a lot of artists, is it's very easy, and I've totally done this myself a million times, to have every excuse in the world for why you're too tired to go to the studio, why you don't feel like you're in the right mood, you don't feel like your mindset's in the right place. If you keep saying things like that to yourself, you will never get to the studio. And trust me, I have totally done that a million times. I still do it every now and then. I hope to think that I'm more disciplined now, but it's a challenge for a lot of people that sometimes you only have so much time in your week to be in the studio. And then I have definitely been there where I carve out that time, I'm in the studio, and I can't focus. I can't get anything done. And that's even more infuriating because you work so hard to carve out that time in the studio. And so the question is, how do we set up a situation that is going to make things really work for us? Those of you guys who are watching, please feel free to jump into the chat box. I'd love to hear from all of you. What are your tips for how to stay productive in the studio, for how to stay on task? Because I know if you're in school, you have teachers breathing down your neck, you've got deadlines, and those can be very stressful. But I actually think the more challenging thing is when you get out of school, you don't have teachers breathing down your neck, you don't necessarily have really hardcore deadlines, and it's hard to motivate yourself on an ongoing manner. And those are some of the things that I want to address. For me, I think actually the hardest part about being productive in the studio is getting started. That sounds obscenely simple, but I had a colleague who I used to teach with at a college many years ago, and his mantra was just start. And I just love that because every time I feel frustrated about my productivity, in my head, I just think, just start. It's really that simple sometimes. But the thing is, how do you get to the point where you actually have started? Now, my analogy for this is going to the gym to exercise, okay? Because the thing is, I know that if I go to the gym to exercise, number one, it's always good for me. I have never gone to the gym and regretted it. In fact, afterwards, I feel great. I feel super energized. And so, why is it that something I want to do that I know is going to make me feel better is so difficult to do? And so, for me, it's this difficult thing of going from, I think I should go exercise, to actually getting into the car to actually drive to the gym to go there. That's the hard part. And I think for a lot of artists, it's the same way. It's like, you know you want to be in the studio, you know you want to be working, but then how do you cross over to that point where you're actually in the studio, actually doing something? Because the thing is, once I'm at the gym and I'm on the treadmill and I'm running, it's great. It's so easy. I know exactly what I need to do. I'm totally in the groove. That's so easy. But it's like getting to that point is hard. And I feel that going to the studio as an artist is a similar thing. And so it feels ridiculous to complain about that, because I think if you have the privilege of having any studio time as an artist for yourself, that's a wonderful thing. But the thing is, how do you maximize that amount of time? I don't have a lot of time during my week to be in the studio because I'm either teaching, I'm working on art prof, I'm giving a lecture, I'm taking care of my kids. I have 1,000 things that could be prioritized over being in the studio, and yet somehow I gotta make the time for this. Oh, hello, Lahona, you're in the chat box. Yeah, if you guys have suggestions for studio tips, what helps you stay motivated? What helps you actually get to the studio and make it a productive session? Because I definitely have had sessions in the studio where I'm just mad at myself, where I'm not getting anything done. I'm so frustrated. And so I want to tell you guys some of the things that I do almost to trick myself into doing good work in the studio. Because it's like, I know what's good for me, but it's like, why is it so hard to do something that you know is good for you? I don't know why. I think it's some mysterious quality of being an artist. Lizzie, Annie, you're right on time. Yeah, you guys are great. Thanks so much for showing up. And let me know if you guys have questions about how to be productive in the studio. I'd love to hear people's suggestions. Okay, let's dig into some of the really concrete things that I do, the mundane things that actually work. So one thing that I would say, and now just think about the stream, I'm gonna talk about going to the studio in terms of having a home studio, because I think that while there are many artists who do have studios that they rent and stuff, I would guess that the vast majority of people don't have that. So actually, I'm wondering, those of you guys who are watching right now, how many of you have a home studio where you live, and how many of you actually pay rent for a separate studio that is located other than where you live? Because there was only like a 1 year period of my life where I did rent a studio. And then after that year, I had a shift of projects. And honestly, I just could not justify the expense. It was so much money for something that I wasn't using full time because I have a million other things to do. And the thing is, I cannot complain because I wasn't actually fully renting a studio. I was actually subletting a piece of a studio, and I had a really, really good deal. I mean, some of the studios in the Boston area are crazy expensive, and I had a great deal. And even then, I felt like it was too big of an expense. Let's see. Casey has a school studio. Lady Contention has home. Also, Lahona. Yeah, I mean, there's a split thing, but I think also, even if you have a studio in art school, there are also challenges there as well. But anyway, even if you have a studio at school, this is what I always do. I never put my supplies away. So if I have like, actually, I've got a whole bunch sitting here. Like if I have this giant bin of art supplies, I don't know why there's so much sandpaper in here, but anyway, if I have all these art supplies here, okay, in theory, I could just keep them in a box, stored away nicely, and that'll be way more organized, but I don't do that. What I do if I'm actively working on a project, I'll actually take the supplies and whatever work surface I have, like I just have this crummy old white desk that I work on, I put the supplies out. So the drawing pencils are not in the box, they're actually on the table. Now that sounds incredibly simple to be thinking about it that way. But for me, that is sometimes the difference, because if I look at a box of art supplies and they're closed and everything's put away, it makes me not want to work so much. And so if I go up to my table and the pencils are out and the erasers are out, it's so much easier to just pick one up and get started. And so I always have my supplies out. Now, it's way messier to do it that way, but just mindset-wise, it's easier for me to just sit down, pick something up, and get started. Another thing that I do, too, is I don't leave my artwork out. So my artwork is the opposite. Okay, so for example, last week I was doing these experiments. So I'll just show you guys some of these. So these are mezzotint prints that I made a long time ago. They're intaglio prints. They're pretty small. You can see from my hand that they're only about 5 inches tall or so. And I have so many of these prints, like piles of them, because I was trying to print an edition of many prints, but sometimes to print an edition of 5 prints, you got to print like 25 to get 5 that are absolutely perfect. And so I have so many prints, like look at this, it's insane. Look at all these prints that I have. And I was like, you know, I really should do something with these. And so Lauren Welch, who is a teaching artist here at ArtProf, she said to me a week ago, we need to cannibalize our artwork more often. I thought, she's right. I got to do that. And I thought, you know, I got all these pieces sitting around. Why don't I just make a collage out of them? I got so many of these. I mean, I stole that from Eloise Sherrod, who is another teaching artist here at ArtProf. That's one of the things I love about ArtProf. We're constantly stealing from each other. It's fabulous. Hello, Mr. T in the chat box. Everybody jump in. Tell me what your studio tips are. Okay, so what I did was I made these collages. So you can see there's one print here, there's another one there. And then I like ripped it up and I added glue and I made a whole bunch of these like little pieces and they're kind of a mess and I don't really know what I'm doing, but it's fun to recycle your artwork. I feel like it's very little work actually. So these are just some quick collages. If you look up close, you can see them a little bit better. I actually put some of these on my Instagram, but I think some of them did not make it there. So these are just some more experiments. Okay, so I have a whole bunch of these. Okay, so the thing about the artwork is I don't leave these out where I can see them. I put them away. Now, here's the reason why. Because I have a tendency, and you guys can tell me if you do the same thing, if my artwork is out, I find that it's just too tempting to look at it every time I pass by and scrutinize myself like crazy and try to judge, oh, did I do a good job? Is this going somewhere? Should I do this instead? And I don't think that's very helpful. I'm somebody who thinks too much about their artwork and it becomes really not a good thing for me to do because I end up ruminating too much and that's not such a good thing. Okay, so what I do actually is I will take these pieces and I try to take a break from them. So instead of having these out on the table where I can see them, this is what I just do. I take them, I take all the pieces, and this is what I do. I just make a pile like this, and I just stick them down like this so I don't look at the artwork when I'm not working. And what that does is the next time I sit down to work, I'm looking at these prints with a fresh set of eyes. Because let me know if you guys do this. Oftentimes when I'm in the middle of working, I try really hard not to judge what I'm doing because it's too much of a distraction. So I just focus on the making. And the really nice thing about these prints is that it was all about material. It was all about experimentation and collage. Because it's old artwork, I didn't have to think about, oh, what's the meaning and what am I trying to say? It was purely engagement with the supplies, which is great. Like, I don't have a lot of projects very often where I can do that. But the thing is, if I'm thinking, is it good, is it bad, while I'm working, that's a really big problem for me, and I'm always wrong. Like, usually, I put them away, and pieces, at the time I was making them, I thought, oh, this is a really good one. And then I pull it out a week later, I'm like, no, it's not. And then other times, you see pieces, and you think, yeah, this is terrible, I don't like this at all. And then you pick it up a week later, and you think, you know what, that wasn't so bad, maybe I should do this some more. So I guess what I'm saying is, for me, when I'm in the studio in the heat of the moment, I oftentimes have really poor judgment on my artwork. And so putting it in this like blank pile of work when I'm not working, I think is really helpful because that fresh pair of eyes is super, super useful. Okay, couple other things I do for home studio. Now, I always do what I call simulating a commute. So the thing about having a home studio is super convenient, right? You don't have to go anywhere to actually get there. I just walk 2 feet and then I'm from my kitchen into my studio. Super easy. But the thing is, I get a little bit of cabin fever if I just wake up and work in the studio. And what I do is, for me, I walk my kids to school. Technically, I don't have to. Technically, they could totally walk on their own. But I love spending the time with them in the morning, and it gets me outside. It's not a super long walk. The whole thing, walking them there and back, is probably like not even a half an hour or so. And so I just find leaving the house really important. Now, if I did not have kids, I would still do this. I probably would go to a coffee place, get a cup of coffee. Maybe I would go to Trader Joe's and pick up those Candy Cane JoJo's that only come out once a year, and I bought 3 boxes last week. Maybe I'd do something like that. Something to get me out of the house so I can come back. Let's see. Lahona's saying, I cannot keep recent stuff or stop there, almost a fear response. Got some really old stuff out to show myself I could really do something interesting as I who did this. Mr. T saying, my art is in the process and stuff around can be distracting. Oh, that's interesting. So you guys have a similar reaction, because you know when you look at your artwork so long, you just hate looking at it. It's like, I don't know, it's like you can't see straight anymore. And so I feel like it's already bad enough that I got to look at it the whole time I'm working on it. And so if I'm not working on it, I don't want to be looking at it. So simulate a commute, because I just find that if I just stay in the house, I start to get really sleepy, and just getting outside is really good. Now, another thing I do, and I just started doing this, and it is so effective, you guys. My phone gets put in another room, not the room next door, the room that's like on the other side of the house, okay? Because if my phone is even on my desk, it's this terrible temptation. And I know I shouldn't check it all the time. I know what's better. I can't help myself. And so I put it in a room where getting up to go check it is enough of a hassle that I don't want to do that. I am working on this. I still don't have it perfect, but I'm trying to make it so I check social media only twice during the day. I have yet to really do that. But I just have found if I'm in the studio and my phone is like within the vicinity, it's all over. So put your phone somewhere else. And I also tell myself when I'm at home working, I don't do chores. I will not load the dishwasher. I will not just pop one load of laundry in there to get ahead. I don't do it. Now, it's annoying sometimes because I'm like, oh, well, if I just got that laundry in at 11, that would make my time at 5 o'clock so much easier. But it's a distraction. And so if I'm at home, I have to be very disciplined and I set these rules, and the rules are super, super helpful. By the way, those of you guys who are watching right now, tell me where you're from. Tell me what country you're in, what city. I'm always so interested to see who is on the chat. Lizzie Annie is a very big procrastinator, trying to complete my portfolio. What do I do to be more productive? I never feel fully immersed or focused in what I'm doing. Okay, great question. That actually comes up to what I was just talking about. So I like to do what I call focused distraction. Now, here's what I mean by this. I mean that you want to be focused enough that you can do what you need to do, but you don't want to be so focused that you actually distract yourself. And so for me, I usually have a podcast on. I sometimes listen to music, but we'll get into that later. But what I like about listening to a podcast, and there's a billion out there to choose from, is it's something for me to focus on that is not my artwork, that keeps me somewhat distracted, but it's not so distracting that I have to stop what I'm doing in the studio to listen to it. For example, I'm not somebody who can like watch a movie and be in studio at the same time. I know some people do that, or some people have like YouTube on in the background. I find the visuals too distracting. So if it's something audio-based, I find that really great. Sometimes I'll listen to stand-up comedy, but that gets a little old because you listen to the same routine too many times. My favorite podcast right now actually is on NPR. It's called How I Built This. And I love that podcast because it's somewhat related to what I do with Art Prof. And so I do feel like I'm picking up tips and getting motivation And that keeps me focused enough on that that I don't ruminate or bother myself. Because you guys ever feel like being in the studio is like this mental self-torture where you just end up going down this rabbit hole of really not helpful ideas about yourself as an artist? Like, who do I think I am? I don't know what I'm doing. Is this going to work out? It's like, oh my God. Wow, people are from everywhere. Minneapolis, San Jose, North London, England, teeny town in the corner of Oklahoma where it tornadoes more than it rains, Dominican and Baltimore, Maryland. Oh, Prince George, Canada. So cool, you guys. We have such an amazing range of people on the stream every single time. I'm just always so impressed. Oh, we have somebody from China. Very cool, you guys. Thanks for letting me know where you are. So the thing is, I listen to the podcast because I focus on that. Because do you guys ever find that if you're not slightly distracted, you just end up bothering yourself the whole time? Like, if I were to give you guys a stream of consciousness, if I don't have a podcast on and I'm looking at the work, I'm going, crap, I should have done that instead. Oh man, so-and-so posted this thing the other day. I'm so jealous. Their work is so much more liberated and exciting. Oh crap, Eloise told me that I should do this for the collage. But Lauren said, it's like this horrible like whirlwind of thoughts. And so listening to the podcast keeps me going. And the nice thing about podcasts is that they're fairly long, at least the ones that I listen to. They're like at least 45 minutes at a time. Sometimes I don't like listening to music because it's broken up into individual songs and segments. And so there isn't this like extended period of time that I feel I've committed to. Because the thing about listening to a podcast, I can't just listen to a podcast for 3 minutes and be done with it. With music, you can. You can be like, oh, well, I just listened to 2 songs. I'm done. I can get up and walk away. But usually with a podcast, I want to finish the whole thing. And if that's a good 45-minute chunk, that's a good way to get started. Melbourne, Australia, La Honda, California, San Francisco Bay Area. Very cool, you guys. Yeah, and those of you who are in the chat box, tell me what your struggles are in the studio. Because it sounds simple, doesn't it? I'm an artist. I work in the studio, right? I love it. That's why I'm doing it. Trust me, I would not be doing it for any other reason. And yet there are a lot of challenges for a lot of people. Now, another thing that helps me is I have what I like to call, well, maybe I should have a different word for this because I know people use the word trigger in terms of like trigger warning. So that's not a very positive word. I should come up with maybe signal. Okay. A signal in terms of, okay, Clara, time to go to the studio. Doesn't matter how you feel, you're gonna go right now. Okay, so there's 2 things that I do. The first thing is oftentimes it's a physical act where I put a tool in my hand. So let's see what's here. Okay, we got a palette knife. See this? Okay, so if I'm working on a painting and I need to get myself to the studio, I do this. I just take the knife, I put it in my hand. Okay, now the knife is in my hand, and sometimes this tool is the physical engagement I need to get off my butt and go to the studio and paint. For a long time, I was doing these sculptures, and I had this one sculpture tool. I don't know if I have it over here. I know my supplies are like such a total disaster. You guys know, like, actually, Casey just brought up keeping the studio organized. See this retractable utility knife? I had to cut a couple sheets of corrugated cardboard the other day because somebody bought a bunch of prints. I could not find this knife. Like, I tore apart like half my house. Like, I opened all these boxes. Oh my God. And it's like, I was like, maybe I can use a pair of scissors. I'm like, no, you need your retractable utility knife. So this is a good incentive for staying organized because then you don't have to tear apart your entire house. But anyway, no matter what tool it is, like let's say it's this brush, okay? And so you put the tool in your hand. Once it's in your hand, that's the signal that you need to go to the studio. Now, in terms of music, I know a lot of people like to listen to music when they are in the studio. You can create like a playlist that you only listen to when you're in the studio. And it shouldn't have songs that are in other playlists. It should be very specific to the studio because the funny thing is the music I listen to in the studio, it's not the same music I listen to when I'm cooking, and it's not the same music that I listen to when I'm on the treadmill. Like, when I'm on the treadmill, I listen to total trash. Like, I listen to, like, super poppy, corny, like, boom, boom, boom music because I gotta get all revved up, okay? But when I'm in the studio, I listen to, like, very, like, mellow movie music that is, like, on but not really prominent. Because if I listen to music that's, like, too exciting, it's like I get distracted by that. And I find movie music is nice because it's there, but it's not meant to be the main attraction. And so that sometimes helps as well. Mr. T is saying art has endless possibilities. It can be easier to put restraints on yourself. It helps me focus. Yeah, that's why I like having these routines to fall back on, because if I just say, oh, go work in the studio, it's sort of hard to know what are the steps to actually do that. I feel like a lot of the times, especially on the internet, I hear all these things about, oh, how to be a better artist. And people say things like, be yourself, sustain your passion. And I'm like, yes, I know that. But what about the actual concrete steps you can do to actually make that happen? And that's what I'm trying to address today. So the thing about the trigger or signal, sorry, I should use signal instead. I actually do this thing where when I'm in the studio, and this is so obnoxious, and I could never have a studio mate for this reason, I don't listen to playlists. I just put one song on. That's it. I just listen to the same song over and over and over again. I don't know if anybody else does it, but I don't know why. It's like there's something about that. It sounds like a really annoying thing, but when I'm in the studio, it actually helps me a lot. And sometimes I get stuck on one song for like a month, and other times, like sometimes I fluctuate between like three songs between the last 6 months or something. But the point is, if it's a sound, if it's a touch, whatever sense you need to stimulate as the signal to get in the studio, whatever works for you is great. Oh, Leon is listening to this right now in the studio. Okay, well, Leon, I guess I'm going to be your podcast for today. That certainly works. Actually, one of my interns, she told me that when she was in high school, she would listen to my portfolio critiques on YouTube while she was working on her artwork because she found it very motivating. So whatever works for you, whatever is going to make that happen. I think another thing to figure out is whether you are somebody who works better having like a marathon chunk of time or doing a little bit every day. Because I was going to say earlier that it's better to break it up, but then I was thinking, you know what? I had this session, I think it was like last week, I was working on the collages I was showing you guys earlier, and I just cleared my evening and I just did that for 4 hours. And I haven't done any studio work for a while. And most of the time, my students in art school, I tell them not to do the marathon because in art school, it can really be a problem just because of the structure of school. It's too difficult to do. So I actually tell my students in art school that, you know, it's a lot more helpful to do a little bit every day, like spread out your work on a drawing over 3 days instead of trying to get it all done at once. But the thing is, when you have a really unpredictable schedule like I do, sometimes that 3 hour chunk is all I'm going to get that week. And if I don't do it, I won't get it. And for me, I was talking to Lauren Welch about this, teaching artists here at ArtProf, that it's not so much that the art takes so much time as much as it is that finding the headspace for the studio is hard. And so if you feel very fragmented with all your different commitments, maybe it is better to say, you know what, all day Saturday, I'm just going to do studio. I'm not going to do anything else. Sometimes that can work better. Other times you can approach it almost like a musical instrument. Like, for example, I played piano and oboe when I was a kid. And I think for music, it is better to practice 15 minutes every day than once a week for an hour. I think in that case, it definitely is better. But I think art is not quite the same thing. I think it really depends on what rhythm works best for you. And also, what is your schedule? I mean, my schedule today is nothing like what it was when I was in art school. And I don't ever expect it to go back to that. And I'm always adapting depending on my kids' schedules and whatever else is going on. Paloma's saying, how do you keep yourself from becoming too mentally drained when working through a piece? Do you pace yourself, take breaks, keep snacks, I feel fried after painting nonstop for more than 3 hours. Yeah, that's really exhausting. I mean, I think the thing about being an artist is that it is physically taxing sometimes. I mean, I have a friend who works in engraving, and I mean, he told me that during his sessions, he's just like bent over like this for like hours at a time, and it really is a problem for a lot of people. So I do pace myself, but I think sometimes, Paloma, what I'll do is like a little shift of material. Like one thing that Alex Rowe, who is another, actually he's in the picture over here. This is Alex Rowe. Alex is primarily a painter. He does illustration and a lot of drawing. But one of his hacks, which I thought was great, he said he just has a hunk of clay on his desk. And sometimes he'll just pick it up and just play with it a little bit. I mean, I suppose it's sort of like a soothing thing. But he said sometimes he just makes stuff. And actually, if you guys go to Alex's Instagram, he was making a couple of these like little sculptures. I mean, nothing like major, but I told him later on, because I saw some of them on Instagram, I was like, you got to make more sculptures. These are really cool. And so sometimes, Paloma, switching up the material, I think is very helpful, and switching to something that's not so involved. Because trust me, I love painting, but painting is so much work. It's like all the supplies, all the tools and everything. And so some days it just feels great to just hold a marker. It's like so straightforward, or just to like have a little sketchbook. I mean, for me, Paloma, I don't like to paint in marathons. I like to do a little bit at a time. Whereas when I was doing these collages that I was showing you guys, I made such a horrible mess that it just didn't make sense to break it up. And so it made more sense to put it into one big marathon chunk. So I think sometimes it depends on your workspace. It depends on the materials. I mean, if I'm painting or sketching on site, I don't use complicated supplies. And speaking of complicated supplies, there is, I think, for a home studio, a good argument for keeping your supplies, number one, safe, and number two, simple, because there are things I cannot do at my house that I could definitely do somewhere else. I think, for example, like I was doing these masks. Actually, I can show you guys. I have a whole like pile of these. So, okay. So these are these little fragments. Some of you guys might have seen on Instagram that I was chiseling away at these things and breaking them up into little pieces. This is my theme for this month, taking old artwork and smashing it up. It actually feels great. I highly recommend that you guys do it. But the thing about these masks is that I had to carve them in ceramic clay. I made silicone molds that then needed plaster mother molds. And then I cast them with beeswax, which you need like a big pot to melt. Like I could never pull that off in my home studio right now. My home studio is not big enough. I don't have all that equipment and everything. And so I'm not doing stuff like that. But the thing is, I don't think that's such a problem because I discovered other things that have definitely kept me busy. Like these collages that I was showing you guys earlier. I mean, this is just glue and some, actually I was using tile grout for some of these. But the point is, this was really simple supplies and this is totally doable at home. And so I definitely have had to be creative because I really can't do super toxic stuff when I'm here. But I think that has gotten me to try out more different things. Mr. T saying, I like doing my work in segments. You can come back with a fresh eye and see things totally differently. Yeah, I think that for sure, for me at least, is one of the most compelling reasons to break it up. Because you know when you look at your work for so long, you just can't see straight at all. Like, it doesn't matter how experienced or smart you are. It doesn't matter. It's like it all starts to look the same after a little while. And I think that's when it's time to take a break. And sometimes if I really am frustrated, I'll put something away for a long time, like not just a few days. Like I'll actually take the artwork and I'll put it in my garage for like 2 weeks. It's called my 2 week rule. I don't look at it for a long time. And then I look at it and it's like you're looking at a different piece. The other thing I do sometimes, I don't know if you guys do this, but I'll take a picture of my painting in my phone so I can see like a little version of it. And sometimes that's a way of getting distance from the piece. Or another thing I do is I'll look at my painting in a mirror and seeing the reverse of that. you start to see, oh my God, that eye is like way too high up. You see things that are somewhat surprising. So I really enjoy doing stuff like that. And then a couple other things that I like to do as well in order to keep the continuity of my work going, because that I think is the hardest thing, because my whole life is a million fragments. It's like my kids, my teaching, my studio practice, art prof, eating, sleeping, all those things that you have to do. It's just a million little pieces. And so how do you keep any feeling of continuity? Because sometimes if I haven't been in the studio for a long time, you guys might feel this way too. It's like it takes you half an hour to remember, oh my God, what was I doing last time? Wait, was I doing that? And that is very hard to do, is to like keep that continuity going on. I think that what helps me is when I'm almost done working in the studio, I know I'm about to leave or go do something else, I never finish things. I always leave something half done. So I'll actually stop myself in the middle of something. I won't finish it and get up and leave, because if something is half finished, when you come back to the studio, you know where to pick up from where you left off. Whereas if you come back and everything's finished, then you got to think, oh, how do I jump start again? How do I start something else? And that is way more mental energy than picking up on a piece that is clearly not finished. Oh, I missed this comment from Lahona. They say, I put a curtain wall between my office space and my studio so I cannot see my computer. Yeah, it's like out of sight, out of mind. I do the same thing with my phone. I just don't want to see it. I don't want to know that it exists. Joshua Daniel is saying, what would you recommend to do when starting in art? Joshua, do you mean in terms of starting a studio session or in terms of experience? Like, let's say you haven't had a lot of years of experience. If you can give me a few more details, I can help you a little bit better. Sometimes when the question's too open-ended, I can end up answering it in the wrong way. Okay, so the thing about leaving something half-finished, I think, is very, very helpful. And actually, you can use social media in a way that I think is very helpful in terms of motivation. Not in terms of like, oh man, everybody else is posting, why have I not posted? I mean, you can use that, but I think sometimes that becomes more to people's detriment than as a positive motivator. But one thing that I did was, I was doing this project many years ago on these self-portraits. The project is called Falling. So if you guys want to check out that project, actually, let me pull up the link for that so you guys can take a look at that project if you have not seen this project before. And so basically, so it was a series, I'm going to type this in, of self-portraits. And what I did online is I announced that I was going to make 50 portraits. Now, that was way more portraits than I'd ever done in my life for one series. Most of the time, my projects were like 20 pieces at a time. And so 50 seemed obscene. That was like more than double what I was accustomed to doing. But because I announced it on my blog, I thought, oh man, I got to do it now because I feel really lame telling people I'm going to do it and then totally flaking out. And so sometimes you can hold yourself accountable by making a public statement about what you're setting out to do. I know it doesn't always work, but for me it does, because I have enough people that follow me and enough students who, trust me, would give me a lot of crap if I did not follow through on what I was gonna say, that's actually very motivating. Okay, so Joshua, you're asking what to do when starting out with art in terms of experience. My suggestion to you, Joshua, would be to get a sketchbook and to really establish a constant sketchbook practice so that you are always making a little something every day. Because I think the productivity thing is really important when you're getting started. If you don't have a lot of years experience, you just got to make a lot of work. Like those of you guys who are applying to art school this year, one of the pieces of advice that we give people is you just got to make a lot of work. You got to log the hours. You got to produce. Because for a lot of portfolios, they'll say, okay, we want 15 pieces. So students will say, okay, I'll make 15 pieces. I'm like, no, you're going to make 30. Because then you're going to pick the best 15 out of those 30. That is being productive. So Joshua, get a sketchbook. And we do have actually a whole bunch of sketchbook videos that might help give you some ideas, because I think everybody has a totally unique way of using sketchbooks. It might be nice for you to do that. So I'm going to just type in this chat box sketchbook videos. Okay, so you guys can look at that. And let's see, Paloma is saying, draw from less, I would say. Draw what you see, not what you think you see. Paloma, was your question about drawing from life? Oh, I guess you're responding to Joshua's question. Yes, I totally am on board for that. That's great advice. And that's another reason for getting a sketchbook, because you just whip it out anytime you want. In fact, I have a little sketchbook. It's not in here right now, but it's literally like this big. It's tiny. And I don't really show it to anybody, but I have it in my purse and I carry it with me everywhere. Basically, if I have my wallet, I have that sketchbook. And there was one day, we were at Joann Fabrics and we were picking up Halloween supplies for my kids' Halloween costumes. And so we were there for like 3 hours. Like, it took so long. And I remember at one point, I just was like, oh my God, get me out of here. And so I just picked up my little sketchbook and I started sketching the people that were waiting in line to have their fabric cut. And it made my day just a little bit better. They're crappy drawings. I didn't show them to anybody. But it's like, that was valid, even if the drawings are crappy. Because I think a lot of people, they put pressure on themselves. Oh God, that drawing wasn't good. That painting wasn't good. It doesn't matter, you guys. Any time you log, making art is valuable, regardless of the results. In fact, sometimes it's the pieces that you bomb on that you learn the most. Although it is really a big bummer when that happens. But you cannot make art and not gain something out of it in some manner. Lizzie Annie saying, I buy so many sketchbooks, I never fill them out. Never in my life I filled one out fully. How do I consistently use one without ripping out the pages? You know something? If you guys watch Kat Huang's sketchbook video, let me see if I can find the link on the page, she says literally the exact same thing. She said that she never finishes her sketchbooks. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's actually sort of a funny quirk. And it's like anything goes with a sketchbook. I feel like a sketchbook is just like primordial soup. It's like whatever works for you is totally fine. So without ripping the pages out. Actually, you know what I've been doing? Because my students on Saturdays, I have them all bring their sketchbooks and I just check in with them one-on-one to see what they're doing. And sometimes they'll say to me, oh yeah, I did these sketches, but they were on another piece of paper and I don't have them right now, but I'll bring them next time. And so what I say to them, look, if you have these like piecemeal drawings that you do somewhere else, just take them and just paste them into your sketchbook. Like, I actually think that having like some element of collage in a sketchbook is really fun. And actually, I would say you guys look at Monica's sketchbook, because she has tons of collage in her sketchbook. I'll just put in the link, Monica's sketchbook. And I know that when I was traveling in Europe, when I was in college, one thing I had a lot of fun doing in terms of collage was I would collect all the train tickets I had. Anytime I went to a museum, I would collect the ticket. If there was like a street map or just a magazine that I picked up, I would just cut things out and put them into my sketchbook. And so it was a nice little scrapbook of my journey combined with the artwork. In fact, some of my students, they put like post-it notes into their sketchbook to like cover up the drawings that they don't like. Because I say to a lot of them, I'm like, guys, don't go over the drawing and scrape it out, like just put another piece of paper or post it or something on top of it if it really bothers you that much. But like I said, everything is valid and you can't get hung up on, oh no, there's a bad drawing in my sketchbook, because trust me, that's gonna happen. That's just part of the process, and be totally okay with that. Now, in terms of social media, getting back to that as a motivator, I think that you have to be careful about it, because sometimes it is sort of a bummer. Like, for example, those of you guys who are applying to art school this year, you probably have seen online, there's a million videos of, these are my portfolio pieces that got me into this art school. And they're very popular. They all have tons and tons of views. But almost every single art student I talk to says to me, when I watch those videos, I feel so stressed out and so crappy about myself. And so I say to them, you know, don't watch them. Okay. I know you want to. It's like a car crash. Like, you can't help yourself. It's there. You're going to look at it. Fine. Get that done and out of the way. But here's the thing. There's a time and a place to be looking at artwork. And here's what I mean, because I am the biggest advocate for studying art history, looking at contemporary art, being influenced by other people. There's a huge part of being an artist and should absolutely be there. But there's a time and a place for it, because I know for me, for a while, I would be reading these like contemporary art journals. I'd read reviews in the New York Times and stuff like that. And I would have the exact same reaction as the high school students watching those accepted art portfolio videos. I just would feel like crap about myself. I would be like, my career stinks. I'm not doing as well as these other people. Their work is better than mine. They're showing in this gallery. And it just would depress me so much. So you know something? At a certain point, I said, I'm just going to turn that stuff off. I'm just, for a little while, I'm not going to read any of that stuff, because it became a huge distraction. So it's like there's a time and a place. And then sometimes I'm like, you know what? I could use a little bit of inspiration. Now I'm going to go over and I'm going to read this magazine. I'm going to do this. And so the thing about looking at other artists is that you have to be a little bit choosy about when you do it, because I think it can be very detrimental in terms of distracting you from your practice, because I think that artists should not work in a vacuum. I think art history has always been about reacting to what's around you. You can't make artwork and not have it in some form be a reaction to the time period that you live in. And so that's very important. But I think sometimes seeing other people's stuff doesn't help you. Like, that's why I almost think that Instagram can be really harmful sometimes, because I have students who are like, oh, I found all this stuff on Instagram. And I'm like, yeah, but you got to just focus on yourself for now. Like, that's actually sort of a problem. Lizzie Annie says, I've watched so many of those videos. They got me anxious to live when I'm not at that skill level yet. Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel when I read like Hyper Allergic, or when I read the New York Times and I see what's showing in New York City, or I see the biggest show, or who's at the Venice Biennale. It's like, that's my version of that. Oh God, I'm never going to be good enough. I'm never going to live up to that level. And so just look at that stuff when you feel ready for it, but be okay, you guys, just putting that aside. You know what? I got to be super selfish. I got to focus on myself and not look at other artists' artwork. Or another thing sometimes is I sometimes find it very refreshing to read stuff that's not by artists. Because I think a lot of times people say to me, they're like, oh, well, you're an artist, so you must read about artists. And I'm like, yeah, I do. But I also really like reading stuff from other fields. Like, for example, I was reading this book by Atul Gawande. I don't know how to pronounce their last name. But he is a surgeon in Boston, actually. And I read all of his books about the medical profession. And I loved it, because there actually was quite a bit of correlation with being an artist, but it was so refreshing to me to read about a completely different field and see how it was different and how there were crossovers and stuff like that. And for example, there's this wonderful article by Matthew Weiner. I don't know if you guys know him, but let me see if I can find the article. So Matthew Weiner, he was the guy that produced that TV show Mad Men, the one with Don Draper and what's his face? John Hamm. John Hamm was the actress in it, actor in it. And so I usually don't like those like motivational artist articles that I see everywhere. I find a lot of them really not helpful, really generic. And it bothers me, because sometimes they're written by people who had like a lot of help. Like, they're written by people whose dad was like really well connected, or like, actually, here's an example. So I once read this interview with somebody who was really young. I think they were like in their 20s or something. And their father was like this huge photographer in the contemporary New York art scene, like creme de la creme, like capital A art world. And obviously they got into the gallery world pretty quickly and easily because of their father's status. And in the interview, they said, yeah, people in the field, even if you're well connected, they don't want to help you if you don't have really good work. And I was like, yeah, but it helps. It just like made me really mad when I read that, because I was like, yeah, but you kind of have a big leg up versus the rest of us. And so a lot of those articles started to make me really mad. So this one by Matthew Weiner is great. It's like literally the only motivational artist article I've ever read that I loved. And I read it over and over and over again. And I'm somebody who never does that. So I'm going to put that in the chat box. So this is Matthew Weiner's article for struggling artists, an article that actually isn't really annoying. Okay, so here's the link for those of you guys who want that. Oh, wait, that's a little bit too long. Hang on a second. Okay, so here it is. Let's see. Elsa says, I love sketching people in line at the pharmacy, the DMV, the coffee shop. Oh, yeah, the DMV would be a good place, because usually the DMV is like, what, like a minimum hour late or hour long line or something. Julia B's working on your capstone painting thesis for your BFA. I feel so doubtful about what I create. I feel like I'm creating no pieces. I graduate in May. How can I push myself more? Julia B, I think what could be helpful is to create a schedule of exactly what must be done by the end of the week. So in other words, like set rules for yourself. Like when I said, guys, I'm going to make 50 self-portraits, okay? I set rules. I said, every single one is going to be this big. They're all done on this. Because the thing is, Julia B, I think that if you have to reinvent the wheel every time you sit down to work on a painting, it's too much work. So if you determine the size, the material, the subject, so you're not totally starting from scratch for every single painting, it makes things a lot easier. So for example, for these portraits I did, they were all self-portraits. They were only faces. I did not have shoulders or arms or anything. It's like you cut back on the number of factors that you have to deal with, and you whittle it down to something very specific. So Julia B, I would recommend specificity will really help you a lot. And the thing is, within that area of specificity, there's still plenty of room to move around. I mean, if I had enough to go on for 50 images, I mean, I could have kept going for sure. I felt like I was not running out of things to do. Like, here's an example. Like, if you guys think about a good TV show, okay? A TV show has a base foundation. It has got a premise. Certain number of characters that are there all the time. There's usually a setting, but then there are infinite variations on that setting. Now, this is totally going to date me, but if you guys ever watch that TV show Cheers, the TV show Cheers, it's set in a bar. In fact, there's very few episodes where they're not in the bar. That was actually sort of rare. And you think, oh, well, it's a bar. That's not a lot of variation. How many things can happen in a bar? A lot of things. Think about how many people come and go at a bar, people who work at a bar. And it's incredible. I mean, they had seasons and seasons of just people in a bar. That was the premise. So Julia B, what is the premise for your TV show? Think about that. I think that will be helpful. Durenka says, I love your live streams. Always comfortable and great to listen while I'm doing art homework. Thank you. Oh, good. Maybe that's your structure, you guys. Every time we go live, you got to go in the studio. Maybe we are going to be your signal that you guys have to get into the studio. Let's see. Elsa says, when I don't have people to draw, I have animals. Drawing animals seems impossible at first because they're always moving, but it got easier after year and it sharpens your observational skills. Elsa, you totally just read my mind. You know why? Because we are going to be releasing probably very, very soon. Like, I don't know exactly when, but really, really soon. Lauren Welch and I, we just literally this Sunday, we wrapped shooting this gesture drawing tutorial, and it's all about drawing her cats. So I'm going to put that link into the chat box. So gesture drawing with cats. And you guys can go to that page. You can watch the preview video. But I'm serious. It's coming out so soon. I've been like busting my ass trying to get it finished. But yeah, I love drawing animals because, you know, something, they move. But I like that part of it. I like the challenge of it. And honestly, I think that if they stood perfectly still, I don't think it would be as fun because you don't capture as much of their character. Because once I was drawing my friend's bulldog, this thing was like a mythological beast. Like, I've never seen anything like this bulldog before. He was huge and he would not stop moving. Like, Lauren's cats, they moved, but they were definitely like napping half the time, or they would like shift a leg. Like, they were so lazy compared to this bull. This bulldog was like the biggest spaz. And I just, at a certain point, you just start scribbling like crazy, but I love that so much. If you guys go to my Instagram, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see it's like a colored pencil sketch. Let me see if I can just pull up the link to my Instagram so you guys can check that out. So I'll just put this in the chat box. So bulldog sketches on my Instagram. You guys can take a look at that. But yeah, animals are a great example of how you can do gesture drawings and draw from life and have a lot of fun, because I had so much fun drawing Lauren's cats. I feel like I know her cats now. Here's the thing, I'm not a big cat person. Like, I like cats, but I'm not obsessed with cats like Lauren is. But after spending time drawing her cats, I feel like I know them. I feel like I understand their personalities. And it's like, if you draw from photos of some random cat online, you're never gonna have that connection. And that's what I love about drawing, which is very, very exciting. Okay, so I want to remind you guys that if you support us on Patreon, in addition to getting rewards for being patrons, you can also be automatically entered into a monthly giveaway. Now, this is very cool because all you need to contribute is $1 a month and you're already in the giveaway. You could, for example, if you win the giveaway, win a portfolio critique. You could get an Instagram critique, a website critique. You can even get mystery artwork from me, original artwork. Original art from Deep D, or you can get mystery art supplies. That's a pretty good deal, you guys. And that's on top of all the other rewards that we have for you on Patreon. So I hope you guys will consider supporting us on Patreon, because I want to keep making content for you guys. And thank you to all of you who already do contribute on Patreon. We cannot do this without you guys. Thank you so much for your continued support. But we have some pretty cool prizes that I'd love for you guys to look at. Also, if you guys need help with stuff like this, like studio tips, websites, staying motivated, go to professional development. This is a whole section on our website, and I did revamp a lot of it. It gives you guys tips for basically all the parts of being an artist that are not the making part of it, like the motivation, the mindset, the approach, galleries, all that extra stuff. Because while the making is super important, there's a whole other part of being an artist that's important. I think even if you are in high school, sometimes it's good to have a little bit of a preview for what to look at. Somebody is saying 9842, I want to have my MFA portfolio critique. Well, I would suggest you guys, here's the thing, you got a lot of options, okay? You can either just pay for it, you can purchase a portfolio critique. I review MFA portfolios, Lauren Welch does as well, or you can do a Skype call. Or if you guys want to support us on Patreon, somebody every single month is going to win a portfolio critique. The value is usually $200, but if you contribute $1 a month, you could win that portfolio critique for $1. That's not a bad deal. And we are doing this every single month, okay? And we don't have that many donors, you guys. So if you enter, the chances that you might win this giveaway are actually pretty high. It's not like we've got 50,000. I wish we had 50,000 supporters, but we're not even close. So what I'm trying to say is I would get in on this now, because this is pretty awesome. I mean, I just started doing these website critiques and mystery artwork. That's pretty cool as well. Paloma saying, how would a portfolio review for transferring from community college to art school differ from a high school to art school portfolio review? I transfer in May. What advice would you give? Okay, well, Paloma, we actually do have a portfolio critique by a student who was trying to transfer. So let me see if I can pull up the link to that particular critique, because I do explain in greater depth what is expected there. So let me just make sure I click on the right thing. Let me see. It's, which is that one? Oh, here it is. Okay. So I'm going to put this in. So this is a portfolio critique by someone applying to transfer to art school. I mean, the short answer, Paloma, is that you probably want to show a little bit more representation of your intended major, because most art schools, if you transfer, you usually skip the first year, which is for a lot of schools foundation, you go right into your major. So that's probably the biggest difference. I think most transfer students, you apply as an illustration major or as an architecture major. Whereas a lot of art schools, if you apply to be a first year, you just apply. Like, you don't apply first year as an architecture major, whereas for transfer you do. But again, that really depends on the school. So definitely check out the school's requirements and see what they actually do. But that is my basic guess as for how to do that. So anyway, if you guys need help with art school portfolio stuff, I would highly recommend that you check out our revamped page. I like tripled the content on this page. There's a lot of videos, but there's a lot of stuff that I wrote down because it's faster and quicker to get you guys that information. I am working on it. I'm still got other stuff to add, but check out this page because there's a lot of new content there that was not there even a month ago. So hopefully you guys will take a look at that. But anyway, you guys, thank you so much for tuning into this stream. Love hearing from you guys. It's a great dialogue. I mean, if we're talking about staying motivated, I feel like you guys are a big reason why I stay motivated, because I'm like, you know what? I got to go to class. I got to teach. I got to keep everybody together. And it's like having this conversation with all of you gets like me all revved up. So I think it's like win-win situation. It's like really great. Elsa Grace is saying Bulldog in Red. Yes, it was. Wow, you have an incredible memory. Yeah, I was doing colored pencil sketches, and the cat drawing tutorial, which is coming out really soon, that one also is done with colored pencils. And I do talk more specifically about my technique for using the colored pencils for gesture drawing. So hopefully you guys will check that out. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you next time.